Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. Hello, friends, and welcome to One Nation Indivisible. We are going to bounce around from here to there and everywhere, zigging and zagging like the boundaries of a gerrymandered voting district down in Texas, which we will talk about. But instead of leaving my sort of roundup of all the stuff that is happening, what should we call this? Should we call this like the shitstorm roundup of everything that's going on? I thought I would move that up to the top of the show this week because I am all over the place thinking about how much that is happening. The pressure that appears to be building on Trump from the Epstein files not going away seems to be getting to him. And it seems to be making him kind of crazy in a way. And I'm not going to cover all that crazy. Again, I try to stay in my lane on this podcast. There's plenty of other great people out there who can dive into specific things. But I try to stay in the religion and the law and the democracy and the Christian nationalism area. Kate Cohen, our lovely friend and guest on this show, wrote me a nice note afterwards after listening to a few episodes to say that that was one of the strengths, and I have tried to keep that in mind. So go listen to some of those other experts for the other hot takes. But let's start with Trump canceling $500 million for mRNA vaccines. Really, this is RFK who is doing it. And if you remember, the mRNA vaccines won the 2023 Nobel Prize for Medicine because they are so fucking revolutionary and life-saving that during the pandemic, some of us survived. That legit might kill a cure for cancer via an mRNA cancer vaccine. We elected inept, inexperienced, inane idiots, and they are killing humanity. And speaking of that, they are destroying NASA satellites that help us measure carbon dioxide in the air because the data so clearly supports the fact that we are in the middle of a climate crisis. And we know who some of Trump's biggest donors were. Some of you will remember that time where he went to a room full of oil and gas executives and said, basically, give me all your money and I'll make sure that you have a much easier time of things, which apparently includes destroying satellites because the data supports a scientific conclusion about reality that they don't like. This is the equivalent of Mufasa watching a herd of wildebeest stampeding his way and deciding that the best course of action was not to just do nothing, but to gouge his own eyes out first and then do nothing. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 29, Jesus says, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. You think that's what he meant? Mr. 2 Corinthians walks into a bar. For all of MAGA's unfounded fears about foreign invasions and their bigoted replacement theories. Their dear leader and his band of demented bootlickers are going to dismantle us from within. They are going to grift and ignorantly destroy from within this entire country. Rather like a cancer that we won't be able to fucking prevent because the brainworm devouring RFK's cortex convinced that toxic mess to gut that funding because he went to law school once upon a time. Not a doctor. Not a medical professional. Lawyers are the worst. I say this from experience. The Republican-controlled Congress deleted habeas corpus from the text of the Constitution on the congress.gov website. So many of you sent me this article. And, you know, it is, in a way, not something to worry about. But then you start to look at it and you're like, you know, this is... it's not great, and it's not a great look. And with another administration, you would chalk it up to what they eventually claimed, which is a coding error. But here, it's a little different. So if you're not familiar, in Article 1, parts of Section 8, including a bit about calling out the militia to suppress insurrections and repel an invasion. Section 9, guaranteeing habeas, prohibiting bills of attainder, which are super important. Those are bills that Congress could pass that would say, for instance, Andrew Seidel is a terrible person and he should be arrested. That's a bill of attainder. Congress can't pass a law like that that targets a single person. Section 9 also prohibits titles of nobility and more. And then Section 10, which limits states' rights, these were all gone. These were all gone from the Constitution on the congress.gov website. And you may remember, we kind of predicted something like this in the episode that we did on habeas corpus. Section 9 says, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Now, the Library of Congress maintains the congress.gov website. This is another body where Trump has fired impartial career experts in favor of his bootlickers. And the Library of Congress said it was a coding error, which does seem kind of strange. But let's pause and just, which career experts did he fire? He fired Carla Hayden, the first black woman to hold that post of Librarian of Congress. Trump fired her with 2 years left in her 10-year term. And who did he nominate to be the bootlickers who would replace Carla Hayden, Andrew? Who did he nominate? Who's there? Well, Todd Blanche is there. And yes, it's that Todd Blanche. The guy who met with Ghislaine, however you say her first name, Maxwell, the predator and child rapist. The attorney who met with her for 2 days just before she was transferred to a cushy federal pen for nonviolent offenders, of which she is not one. This is Trump's criminal defense lawyer in the 2024 trial in New York, where Trump was convicted of 23 felonies. That's the Todd Blanche. The Todd Blanche who was Paul Manafort's lawyer back in 2016. Trump named that Todd Blanche the acting Librarian of Congress in May. And it's all just too unfucking believable. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, like one of the biggest companies in the entire world, met with Trump in the Oval Office. And I recommend going and watching this video because it is just truly a sickening display of sycophancy. And Cook presents Trump with this gold and glass statue because I guess kissing Trump's ass in the Oval Office would be frowned upon. And this is just such a good reminder for all of us out there that for-profit companies do whatever it takes to make money. And billion-dollar companies are going to go even further. They will get in bed with autocrats and fascists. And if you think this is the first time, spend an afternoon exploring the rabbit holes of the companies that thrived in Nazi Germany. Adolf and Rudolf Dassler had a shoe factory that made athletic shoes, but then also shoes for the Hitler Youth and later even anti-tank missiles, which maybe they didn't have as much of a choice there. But today we know their companies as Adidas and Puma, respectively. Hugo Boss himself was a Nazi and made uniforms for the SS. Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, all similar, dive into their harrowing World War II labor practices for extra credit. All these companies are still around today. No for-profit billion-dollar company is going to protect you or your rights. This is the shit that always bothered me about Facebook and about Twitter. No company is out there to protect your free speech. It's a line that they're selling you. And look, you know, I have companies that I like, places you like to support. None of them. Just assume none of them. We were never going to be able to rely on a tech company to protect free speech. That is not what they're about. They're not about free anything. And there is a theme in each of these little vignettes, despite my anger and ranting. There is a common denominator, a through line. And really, the through line extends back through much of what we have covered in the 6 months that this podcast has been on the air. Think back to some of the other things that we've covered, to the changing history displays in the national parks. The Smithsonian caving to Trump on its impeachment display, removing mentions of Trump being removed from office in their impeachment display. The Smithsonian. Think back to Trump's March executive order, which is laughably called Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History. Think back to his order banning AI from being woke or using DEI. And whatever the fuck that might mean, it means bending AI to conform with the Dear Leader's ideology. It means making it more conservative, more reflective of his political ideology. That's what it means. Think about how they purged military web pages of any mentions of women or black and brown or LGBTQ service members. Think about how he just gutted the Institute for Museum and Library Services and so many of the other informational agencies and institutions that we have out there. Think about the white Christian propaganda paintings that some agencies are putting out. And the DHS telling people that they should come on and defend their culture by joining ICE. They tweeted that. Defend our culture. I mean, that is, you know what it is. Think about the Gulf of America, as silly as we all thought that at the time. And think about, of course, President Trump's National Garden of American Heroes. Do you think Tim Cook's 24-carat ass kiss will get him a garden spot next to Ronald Reagan and Walmart founder Sam Walton and, yes, Steve Jobs? I don't. Think about the destruction, the utter havoc he is wreaking on public education. And as I was trying to think of the way to sum up this through line, to really get at the heart of what he is doing here, I was reminded of the oracle of authoritarianism, Orwell. And in 1984, the book, not the year, George Orwell wrote, "Every record has been destroyed or falsified, every book rewritten, every picture has been repainted, every statue and street building has been renamed, every date has been altered, and the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right." That is what Trump has spent his first 7 months in office doing. Donald Trump failed to steal the election on January 6th, but he and his Republican cronies are trying to steal our democracy right now with gerrymandering. Texas Republicans are looking to steal more seats in the House, and Vice President J.D. Vance is flying around chit-chatting with other Republican-controlled state representatives, governors, and trying to convince them to do some gerrymandering in places like Indiana. We've also heard about Ohio and possibly Florida and more. Now, gerrymandering is wrong. Voters should choose their politicians. Politicians should not choose their voters. Why, we'll ask it. Again, why is one of the questions that I wanted to answer on this podcast always, and maybe this one's obvious, but why are they so bent on anti-democratic means of seizing power, whether it is gerrymandering or January 6th or capturing the Supreme Court? Why are they so bent on figuring out ways to seize power that are not persuading voters of the rightness of their cause? And the answer to this is obvious. It's because their policies are fucking unpopular. Their policies are wildly unpopular. This is one of the reasons that I always say that America will never be a Christian nation, because the moment it becomes a Christian nation, it will cease to be America. Christian nationalism and the policies that it espouses are fundamentally opposed to the aspirational values that we have yet to live up to. Values and ideals like we the people and equal justice under law and those other founding maxims. Those are the values that Christian nationalists fight against. And their ideas are wildly unpopular. You know, as we discussed in the last episode, they oppose marriage equality. But something like 71% of Americans support it. They want to outlaw abortion everywhere. 85% of Americans think it should be legal in some or all circumstances. They want a nation of Christians just like them. 73% of Americans are more welcoming of religious pluralism. I've told you repeatedly that they are coming for contraception. They would like to ban contraception too. But that's something that like 91% of Americans favor. Those numbers terrify them. They are scared. They are scared because of you. The people who are listening to this podcast, they're scared because the nuns are on the rise, because Americans are leaving religion behind, because we elected our first black president, because we had a black female vice president, because of marriage equality, because of every day we are closer to racial and gender and LGBTQ equality. Their status, conservative straight white Christian status as the dominant group in our society, was threatened. And it had been for a long time. They were losing the culture wars, which, again, I think is a silly phrase that is meant to mask attacks on human rights. They have been losing steadily the power and privilege and deference that they believe they are due. And when a dominant group or a caste in a society feels its status threatened, it reacts or overreacts to retain that status. That's why they turn to Christian nationalism. That's why they turn to violent insurrection on January 6th. That's why they turn to these so-called strongmen. They are raging against the dying of their privilege. And the policies that they want to implement are wildly unpopular. They cannot be done by democratic means. Put to a vote, they would lose every time. And this is why they targeted the Supreme Court. This is really important. This is why they targeted the Supreme Court. And this does get to gerrymandering, I promise you. Because a former employee of Leonard Leo's described Leonard Leo's mission like this. Quote, he figured out 20 years ago that conservatives had lost the culture war. Abortion, gay rights, contraception. Conservatives didn't have a chance if public opinion prevailed. So they needed to stack the courts. Again, that's what they did. And yes, you've heard me say that quote. Yes, you'll hear me say it again, because it perfectly sums up what they were trying to do. They knew they couldn't win with democracy, so they needed another way. So they went to capture one entire branch of the government that could undo democracy. Not that could just hand them policy wins, which this conservative Supreme Court absolutely does, but which could also undermine the project that would prevent them from enacting their wildly unpopular policies. this gerrymandering that we're seeing talked about around the country is going to happen because Leonard Leo was successful in capturing the court. There's a string of precedent at this court that is anti-voter and anti-democracy. You could start it with Bush versus Gore back in 2000. I think that's fair. But that was seen as outrageous at the time. It was an outlier at the time. I think Al Gore was a little bit of a fool. No, that's unfair. I won't get into that right now. We'll do a whole show on that sometime, and also check out American Crusade for more on that. But a decade later, really, John Roberts took this anti-democratic, this anti-voter mission just full steam ahead. So you get Citizens United, the 2010 decision, which says, you know, money is speech and corporations are people. Then in 2013, you get Shelby County versus Holder, where the court said that it's unconstitutional for the federal government to force states with a racist history of suppressing voters to clear changes to elections that might attempt to reenact some of that institutional racism. This was known as preclearance, right? If a state that had done some racist voter suppression wanted to change something about their elections, they had to clear it with the federal government because, you know, you guys haven't done the best job in the past. Supreme Court strikes that down. Pre-clearance is unconstitutional. Rucho versus Common Cause comes in 2019. We'll talk about that in a second. And then Brnovich versus the Democratic National Committee in 2021, which narrowed our ability to enforce the Voting Rights Act under Section 2, something the court is likely to abolish altogether next term in a case out of Louisiana, which we'll also talk about in a second. But let's pause on Rucho versus Common Cause. This was the 2019 case. And this answers our why for the particular question today. Why can states gerrymander in a way that favors one party? Because the Supreme Court said so. The Supreme Court said so in Rucho. And basically what John Roberts said is that partisan gerrymandering claims present political questions, which are beyond the reach of federal courts. What this means, and this is an oversimplification because this is a podcast, there's a whole area of law, of subject matter, that the courts won't touch because they are political questions that need to be solved by the political process through democracy. So what Roberts is saying here is that voters who object to their vote being discounted, diluted, degraded by partisan gerrymandering, the solution to partisan gerrymandering is for those voters to vote. So the voter says, hey, my vote has been neutered by this really weird bullshit district that these politicians drew. They are cheating. And the court says, ah, we can't help you. The only way to fix that is to vote. Yes, but the problem is with my vote. Sorry, the only way to fix that is by voting. It is one of the dumbest decisions I think the Supreme Court has ever made. And if you have followed me, you know that's not actually a word I toss around lightly. I do not tend to call people or things dumb or stupid. I think it's overused in our culture. I don't like it, but this is just dumb. There's no other word for it. It's wrong and it's bad, but it's also, it makes no sense. It is stupid. And what these decisions collectively do is they protect the power of conservative white Christian men who would otherwise be subsumed in a demographic tide that might keep them out of office, whose unpopular opinions policy opinions would never be enacted. Now, I have been saying since Rucho in 2019 that I think the Democrats need to gerrymander. So I've been saying that for about 6 years. I was looking back to see if I could find it, and there was a couple podcasts I was on, RIP to the Opening Arguments podcast that I appeared on, and I'm not going to get into that ever, but talked about it on there. Definitely tweeted about it. You know, my unpopular take is that every Dem-controlled state should be gerrymandering along political lines as much as possible. I do not agree that what the Supreme Court did here was correct. I do not think gerrymandering is right, But if the courts are not going to do anything and the GOP are going to gerrymander their states, the Democrats need to respond. I have been saying that for a while, and things have been changing since then. Because right now it'd be a very hard battle for the Democrats to win. This goes back to that line from American Crusade that I was talking with you all about that haunts me, that 2021, 2022, when the Dems had a measure of control, would have been the time to unfuck the Supreme Court, and that the failure to do that is going to haunt us forever. Well, similar thing here. The time to do this would have been then, not in response to Trump and MAGA trying to steal more votes. Because in a lot of blue states, there are safeguards that ensure that partisan gerrymandering can't occur, because it's wrong. And these safeguards don't exist in Republican states. So to give you just one for instance, in California, they have an independent redistricting commission that comes up with the districts, which is a great way to do things when you're trying to prevent partisan gerrymandering from happening. And that independent redistricting commission is written into the state constitution. And the state constitution would then have to be changed by, I believe it's two-thirds vote of all voters before Gavin Newsom could do his thing and beat Greg Abbott at Abbott's own game. So there are structural roadblocks that the Democrats face that Republicans don't face because they don't care about that kind of thing. You've got states like North Carolina, which are, you know, as close to blue as you can be, but hugely red because of how badly they've been gerrymandered and because the state Supreme Court is also captured and they're allowing it. And you're not the same kind of thing that you see in blue states. But let's just pause for a second. Imagine if they weren't. Imagine if these roadblocks didn't exist. What if blue states and red states could gerrymander freely? And, you know, the blue states could gerrymander to counteract Texas. And then what if, you know, you get the red states, Florida, Ohio, Indiana, et cetera, reacting and doing the same? Well, the reality for Democrats right now is that it's at best a wash, but probably favors Republicans. It certainly favors Republicans realistically when we talk about those barriers that do exist. But even theoretically, given the way things are, probably still favors Republicans. Not where we want to be. Especially, look, going into every midterm, the party in power is disfavored. The resistance is favored. Trump is not on the ballot, which is an even bigger downside for the Republicans. He's no House members are going to be able to ride his coattails into office. Midterms are going to be huge. I mean, they are. If you remember back to Trump 1.0, they are a way that we were able to. This is how we got him impeached, by starting to take back the House. It is important to do, and it will be. You don't get the big beautiful bill if the House is not in the hands of a Christian nationalist Republican like Mike Johnson. Now, let's just go back for a second, and then we're going to end, to the anti-democracy cases, to that steady stream, that steady march, the jackbooted march of anti-democracy, anti-voter cases that this Supreme Court has decided. Because the Supreme Court did just agree to hear a case called Louisiana versus Calais. And this is also about the Voting Rights Act, Section 2. And again, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is what allows citizens to challenge violations of their rights. It is actually incredibly important. And I mentioned the Brnovich case from 2021, Brnovich v. DNC, which didn't kill Section 2 altogether, by no means, but it did curtail our ability to use it. And this is just hugely important. You do not have a right to sue over something just because a wrong has happened. Just because your right to vote has been diluted in some way, shape, or form, suppressed in some way, shape, or form. You don't have just a right that exists in the ether. If the cite to a law and then you have to have a vehicle to bring the violation of that right to court as well, which involves more laws. A lot of civil rights cases are brought under 1983, but a lot of these cases involving voting are brought under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And many, 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 many of them are brought by private plaintiffs, by individuals, often by groups that are representing individuals. You think of like the NAACP and the ACLU. And Professor Ellen Katz has a law review in, I believe it was Michigan Law Review, about curbing private enforcement of the VRA. And she wrote that private plaintiffs have been party to 96.4% of Section 2 claims that have produced published opinions since 1982. And the sole litigants in 86.7% of these decisions. And the case out of Louisiana involves majority and minority districts, which I'm not going to get into at the moment. You can go look those up. They are an important way to ensure representation, and they were especially important after the Voting Rights Act was passed. I'm almost certain that this court, if it's going to decide the merits of that, are going to declare those unconstitutional, but I would not be surprised if they also just gut Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act altogether, which would effectively end private enforcement of the Voting Rights Act and leave it up to the federal government. Leave it up to Donald Trump to enforce your voting rights. Folks, we're going to leave it there. I was going to talk about a case involving an anti-vaxxer out of the Fifth Circuit. It's been a hard day, and it's been a long week. And I have ranted enough, and I'm going to go have an Irish whiskey with a big ball of ice in it and sit outside and enjoy the fact that we still have satellites flying around up there telling us accurate data on how badly we're fucking up the Earth, at least for a little while longer. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.